Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, we've got a great guest. He describes himself as an American-Canadian actor with an artsy degree from the UK. He could be seen in such shows as The Flash, Big Sur, The Morning Show on Apple TV, and Flight Attendant, and many, many other things. It's Jason W. Wong. Jason, welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, do you know what? And reading your bio, first of all, so let's talk about this degree from the UK. So did you train over here in the UK?
Well, I studied art over in the UK. It was a great experience, and I lived there for several years. I still go back to visit almost every year, up until the pandemic, actually. I would go back and visit every year.
Wow. So I presume it is warmer over there right now. Where are you calling in from?
Los Angeles.
Oh, so it's definitely going to be warmer. Currently, I think it's like -3, -4 at the moment. So it is pretty cold. And as Brits, we like to moan about the weather, whether it's cold or it's warm. But no, it's great to have you on. I mean, obviously, you've done loads of things. We're here to talk a bit about your career and also about this wonderful book that you've helped publish, which I think is absolutely amazing. So what initially drew you to this business? Because it's one of these businesses that is probably one of the most competitive. You've got to have such a thick skin. I mean, what attracted you to all this craziness of the acting world?
I guess it had to be the creativity and just it's so much more about the work than the process. Studying art, I ended up focusing on experimental film and performance art and video art and installation. And that started the whole process for me. And then when I moved to San Francisco and I started, that's when I actually began studying acting at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And from there, I started on stage. And it was many years before I even got a commercial agent and started booking commercials. But it's been a slow process, but a good one.
I can imagine it's quite challenging. I mean, I did performing arts at university, and I did acting, and I've done a few films. But I actually left the business because, I just thought it was it is over here, very fickle. You've got to look a certain way. And it's not about talent. It's about how you look. And I think that that's still the case in the way of the business. Ethnicity or your size or it's just ridiculous. I struggled with that. So I left. So I admire anyone that's actually still sticking it out and dealing with the ups and downs. But do you have a plan in place? Did you have a plan in place when you wanted to start this journey of what you wanted to achieve? And is that plan the same?
It's actually been quite organic in how it's unfolded. And I think having a grounding or a foundation in theater and on stage really helps, because at least in my experience on stage, the casting can be more diverse. You can suspend your disbelief for a lot of theater, or at least the audiences can. And so there are so many more possibilities. And when you're given those possibilities and it creates that strong foundation and confidence, I think that you can take to any other medium.
I mean, you've done obviously a lot of TV and film, and obviously theatre. I mean, what is it about the theatre that you love so much? And which do you prefer? Because I've got to say, theatre, you get that buzz when you're on stage. You're on stage in front of that audience, but obviously on TV and film, you've got to wait to get that gratification after it's filmed and after people watch it. So which one would you prefer if you had a choice to do like forever? Would it be theatre or film and TV?
It might be theater. In both cases, I just like to work, and I love the regularity of work, and that's why theater, there is that regularity. You're doing five, six, seven shows a week. And there's that, and there's the repetition, and it's your job. You just go to work every night or every day. And
I
with
mean,
film and television,
yeah. No, I was just about to say, do you do theatre now then? Because obviously, primarily, you're doing TV and film. I mean, do you go back to the theatre? Have you since the pandemic?
I have not. No, it's been a few years. So there's that obstacle to overcome. Sometimes when you're not in the world and there's not that same immediacy, you can sometimes lose a bit of momentum. And so the last few years, I've just been focusing more on film and television.
Excellent. I mean, to date, obviously you've been in so many great shows and had so many great parts, but has there been sort of a part that's really challenged you that you thought, do you know what, I'm really glad that I said yes to?
Do you mean in film and television or
Yeah.
theater or all the above or film and television?
Yeah. Film and TV, yeah.
Gosh, I'm not, I guess the most challenging one is most challenging parts are whenever you have to play a real person, a historical character. And I've done that for an indie film, Big Sur, several years ago. And that was a great experience working with all these other actors who were also portraying historical, real people. But there's a pressure there about doing justice to that person, whether they're alive or not. You want to make certain that you honor them.
I mean, it's got to be you've got to be careful as well because, in this industry, you get a lot of people criticizing or comparing you to the real person. So it's got to be challenging the best of times. I mean, starting your career, how challenging was it to get to where you are now? I mean, can you mention any sort of obstacles that you had to face? Because as audiences, we see you on screen and we think it's this glamorous life. But behind the scenes, it is a struggle. It is sort of a hustle to get to where you are now. And there's a lot of hard work, a lot of training. So what's been the biggest challenges that you've had to face to get to where you are now?
It's just got to be balancing life and living and paying bills. I think a lot of people don't realize that so many actors, even the ones that you see as series regulars every day on television, a lot of them also have to do other things to pay the bills. As we've seen from the recent actors' strike, it's made it much more transparent how little sometimes we can make. Even on programs and shows that run on Netflix or Hulu or any of the streaming services, it can sometimes be a challenge in that regard. And for me, up until about 9 years ago, I had full-time day jobs, and so I've had other careers in addition to the acting.
I mean, with the SAG strikes, I think even though actors weren't in a great place when the strikes were going on because obviously there was no income coming in, but from the larger scale of things, I think it was great to highlight the fact that, we think these actors and yourself, you get paid loads of money. But the fact that 80, I think it was like 85 or 83% of SAG members don't actually qualify for medical or something like that because of you're not hitting that threshold of earnings, which is shocking because we all pay these incredible costs for streaming and these services from Paramount Plus to Disney. And to know that, the stars are getting paid not enough. It's a bit like when you get your coffee, you want to make sure it's fair trade. You want to make sure that the people picking the coffee beans are being treated well and they're getting paid, the right amount. I know it's a weird comparison, but it's the way that my brain works.
It's a fair comparison, actually. It's just the strike just really highlighted that.
But I'm glad that the strike is over, and I'm glad that people are going back to work. Because, yeah, I mean, I've spoken to quite a few actors that, yeah, I mean, they were painting houses, they were making ends meet, and at the end of the day, it is a job. We see actors as this ma these magical creatures on our screens, being all glamorous, but we are people with jobs, and you've got to make ends meet, as you said. So, obviously there are ups and downs, and you've got your auditions. I mean, from an actor's point of view, do you like auditions or do you hate them?
I think it depends. I don't know if it's a theater background or having a theater background, but I love cold reads because it feels like everyone is on the same level and no one has an advantage when you go in and no one's had a chance to prepare. I love that for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, auditions, you know, they've changed over the years because obviously very much so they were in person, but then you've got self-tapes. I mean, which do you prefer? Do you prefer the self-tapes or do you prefer actually auditioning in front of people?
I've had a change of heart. I used to hate self-tapes, but then during the pandemic and just getting used to it because that was the only choice, I realized that I had so much more control over how I was presented and how I looked on camera or on video. And it's changed my mind. It changed me completely.
Mm. I mean, I suppose self-tapes, you've got, you know, the chance to you know, delete and redo and end up with the best version that you feel you have. I suppose in person though, you can get that feedback. You can get that, you know, these producers and casting directors can see you. And even if you're not right for the job, you've already made an impression, maybe for another part or a future project. I mean, obviously, you know, the industry, as I mentioned earlier on, could be quite fickle. So as an Asian actor, what challenges have you faced in the industry? Because we'd like to think that times are changing. And I feel that they are, but very, very slowly. But what sort of challenges do you face being an Asian actor currently in the industry?
And specifically an Asian male actor, there's far less representation than even Asian women who are making a lot of inroads for all Asians. But Asian male representation is still very low. And I receive, from my management, I receive a submission report so I can see what they've submitted me for. And there was one show in particular where they had submitted me for every open ethnicity role that was possible. And I only got called in for the one that was specifically for an Asian man.
Right.
And that was over the course of a year for this entire series.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is ridiculous. You would think that we're getting to the point in life where, you know, people need to be a lot more open. I mean, for example, there is a show called Warrior Nun that I absolutely love on so many levels. And the one thing I love about it is the fact that it has got a great storyline. And it does appeal to the gay community because of this storyline. But the way that they do it is so beautifully done. It's not sort of... There was a word that someone mentioned, something like gay bait or something like... something where a show is done in a certain way to... I don't know the word. I'm sure that someone will comment on the video exactly what I'm talking about. So you would think that the world is as changed. But what do you think needs to happen for the industry? If you had a magic wand, what would you change?
I think I would really like to change the perspective or the thoughts of the people who are making these decisions. Because I've noticed that a lot of writers have added in Asian males, or people, or the writers themselves seem to be more open to casting different ethnicities and different, even different body types, different physicalities for a lot of roles. But somehow it seems like the gatekeepers or the people at the top, the people who are in control, are still trying to shape what people see.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite embarrassing as well to think that these little independent films, which I absolutely love indie films, I think they're the best because you get a lot more heart, you get better stories and everything. They do feature a lot of the diversity within our world, but it's the big studios that I think need to have, you know, words, because you know, I think you mentioned in a previous interview that you know, having an Asian lead as a love interest, you know, in like a project is near enough unheard of, which I'm bringing up two little girls, and I want them to see the world as colorblind as possible. You know, not thinking, you know, orientation or race. And it's great to see certain shows and certain programs actually doing it really, really well. But it's quite sad to think that these big studios are still not getting the hint. But I mean, we've come a long way since Breakfast at Tiffany's, which is one of the most embarrassing things, really. And that just shows where we've come from and to. Which I'm glad to say, because that is shocking when you look back, because the world has definitely changed. So how important is it for the entertainment industry to tell diverse and authentic stories? And what role do you see yourself, you know, playing in promoting inclusivity in future projects?
I think it's about just reflecting the world around us. And not only that, but how we would like the world to be. Like you said, you're raising children, and mm-hmm. how would you want them to see the world? I think of, and I mentioned this quite a bit, because I just recently got back into it, was Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I recently got into Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and it just reminded me of why I love the original series and the Next Generation so much, because they were inclusive and they showed a world and a universe that we would like to have, one of peace and exploration, you know, conflict if it has to happen. But for the most part, the goal is to coexist peacefully and to have everyone on board.
Yeah, and that show and even Discovery as well, Star Trek Discovery, as well as Strange New Worlds, they're both doing an amazing job for that diversity. And secretly, I love when people start complaining, because I'm just thinking, do you know what? Get over it. Do you know what I mean? The world shouldn't be this hard to live in. And it's great to see them, you know, tackle those and at a level as well, because Star Trek is quite a high profile franchise. So for them to do that, I applaud them. So I wanted to talk about the book that you helped publish, because sadly, a couple of years ago, you lost your husband to cancer, which I've got to say, cancer was one of those things. I lost my dad last year to cancer, and you know, it's one of those things that you know, grief can be a horrible thing. It's like waves; it comes and goes, but it never goes away. But you obviously used, you know, what you had inside to do something really positive and really, really nice. I'm going to bring the book up here, which is House Fire. If you could tell us a bit about the inspiration behind actually, you know, deciding on getting these stories and poems out.
Well, first, I'm sorry about your loss as well. I'm sorry to hear about your father. You're right. When you're in the throes of grief, sometimes it helps to channel it and to have some sort of mission or some sort of purpose. And after my husband Jim passed away, I just wanted to carry on his legacy. I wanted to carry on his work. I know that before he died, he said he just wanted to be remembered. And as a writer, I think that meant, he said it meant to have a book, to have something physical out there that people could read. And his work had been published before in different magazines and anthologies and different collections. But to have all of his work, or to have a great deal of his work, it's not everything, but to have a great deal of his work compiled like this, I know would have meant so much to him. And so it was something that I felt compelled to carry on and to finish for him.
Mm. I mean, when you say that it's not all his work, I mean, how difficult was it to get that collection together and actually decide what was going to go into the book? Or was that decided beforehand?
It's really interesting. My husband was primarily a poet, but when I approached this publisher, they had never published any poetry before. They typically did fiction or nonfiction. And so I also mentioned that he had written a series of short stories that they're kind of in various stages of completion and in various different forms. But the publisher and editor said, let's take a look at those as well. And they decided to do a compilation of poetry and short stories.
Well, it's definitely available in the UK because I've pre-ordered it. I have ordered it and it's on the way in like 3 days. So I look forward to reading it because I love to discover new things. And I think the power of word, I think, is beautiful. I think it holds so much. I mean, is there a special part of the book that holds quite a significant part in you? Is there a certain poem or...
There are poems and stories as well. There are a couple of stories that are actually quite prescient in a way. One is a kind of post-apocalyptic, post-pandemic story that he wrote well before our pandemic. And I find that really strange and wonderful in a certain way that he somehow could imagine that before it happened and before he died. As well as another story about grief that... Again, I think kind of foretold what I and you and others who have lost people close to them have felt. And there are definitely some poems as well. There's a poem about the first time that we met, and that has a very special meaning to me.
Oh, bless. I mean, is there any plans to maybe turn anything from that book into something? Because obviously, if it's full of stories as well as poems... making it into short stories, into a short film.
I never actually thought of it until now. And it is something, when you're an actor, you're often encouraged to create your own stories and to write your own stories. And you've actually provided me with a bit of inspiration.
It would be fantastic because, again, short films, I think, are fantastic because... Don't get me wrong, 90 minutes, you can have an amazing film, but short films, I just think, are just brilliant to watch. They really are. So it's available in the UK on Amazon, I know that. Where's the book available in the States and Canada? Where can people buy it?
You can also order it through Amazon or through your local bookstores as well. Every bookstore should be able to order it for you. So if you want to support your local bookshop, please do.
If only we had ones here. We don't really have any bookshops, the local ones. It's all Amazon. They're taking over the UK. So then you mentioned, obviously, you had quite a lot of other things. Is there a plan to put his other, stuff together and release maybe a second book?
It's always a possibility. I'd like to go through, actually, some of his other writing and see what else could be compiled. So yes, I think it's always a possibility.
I mean, with the artwork on the cover, was that your inspiration or was that done by someone else?
It was actually done in conjunction with a graphic designer. There was this image that is actually taken from a vintage photograph that Jim had. Jim liked to collect old postcards and old photographs. And that is of these two men that... He always kind of fantasized and imagined that they were lovers, but it was taken, I think, sometime around maybe the Gold Rush era. So maybe early to mid 19th century.
Oh, wow. Do you know what? Pictures like that, I'm always fascinated with to know who they are and what their stories were, you know, how they lived their life. But who knows? They might be lovers. You know what I mean? It's great to think. But I mean, obviously we've got that book coming out, so go out, buy it. I think it's a great thing of what you're doing. Again, you know, his legacy is going to be on people's bookshelves, and read and cherished and handed down, I am sure. So going on to obviously, you know, your future, what have you got planned? What have you got coming up? Because, you know, hello.
Oh, sorry.
You've got a phone
sorry
call
about that.
Coming up. There we go, on cue. I mean, what can we see you in at the moment? Because you are so busy at the moment. It's crazy.
Well, right now, not to be a walking advertisement for Amazon, but this great feature that we did that might appeal to you as well with daughters is this live action feature that we did for American Girl dolls. There's this special called American Girl Corinne Tan, that is out on Amazon as well, Prime Video. And it's a great, it's a wintertime feature. So it's perfect for this season right now. It's set in the snow and it's all about, you know, it's all about winter sports and adventures. It's a great family piece.
Oh, so that's if my girls, you see, my girls are 6 and 10. So their attention to sitting down and watching programs can be quite challenging at times. So I will try my best. So what was the last movie or TV show that you watched that you thought, do you know what? This is why I'm in the business. This is why I do what I do.
Gosh. I have to say, maybe it's also because it was one of the last things that I worked on was The Morning Show. And this most current season of it has been amazing. This third season and just the ups and downs of it has been amazing. And the performances in there were incredible. And to be a part of that was just an honor.
Oh, wow. Do you know what? I haven't actually watched the Morning Show. I keep on watching it. And I've got to say, Apple make the best shows. So I'm sure that it is going to be fantastic, and I promise I will watch it, because at the moment I'm watching either Monarch, For All Mankind, Slow Horses, which is a fantastic British, well, it's an Apple show, but it's about MI5 in England, which is great. It's got Gary Oldman in it, and he's just fantastic in that show. And then what I normally ask every guest is that if your life was a movie, what title would it have?
I have no idea. I've never thought about that.
And that is normally the reaction I get. But you know, it's fine. You could name it, I have no idea.
Yeah. I used to have an idea for my autobiography, but that's, I think it might be a little risque these days, but.
Risque is good. It's good to flirt with that line and challenge the norm, because we don't want to be normal. We want to be extraordinary. You know, we want to be testing that line. But Jason, you've been a great guest. I look forward to seeing everything that you do in the future. And I look forward to receiving that book, and I'll make sure I'll message you and let you know my favorite parts, because I just can't wait to read it. But thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.